Kia ora and welcome to At a Loss, a series of conversations about living fully when death makes its presence felt. I'm Timothy Giles. I work as a funeral celebrant, which gives me the privilege of conversations around grief and how we enjoy a life when grief is around us. We've had an episode a little while earlier about COVID with you, Jill Gonson.
Yes, yes.
Thank you for that. And thank you particularly for letting me change the reason that you wanted to come in and do the podcast, which was actually, and for me, something that I was really delighted about. You're the first listener to hear the podcast out in the wild and to contact me and say, I want to talk to you.
Yes.
Can we revisit that conversation for a moment?
Yes. Well, it was really that you told me in conversation that you were making these podcasts about grief, and I was instantly interested, having experienced the loss of my life partner 18 months ago. The fact that there was someone local, someone who, in fact, I was sitting across the room talking to, who was making a podcast on grief. I had been listening to podcasts throughout the long, dark nights of the previous months, but was typically only able to access podcasts from other countries, and they were often not really what I felt I was looking for. So I became instantly interested, and you let me listen to some of those podcasts.
But then I got quite a frightening... Was it an email or was it a phone call? Did you email first saying, I need to talk to you about the podcast? And the reason it's frightening is because you have a lot of qualifications in this area. And you were the supervisor of my supervisor, right?
Yes.
And it's quite scary. You want to talk about this podcast?
Well, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to frighten you. And I think what I would say there is that, yes, I have got qualifications. I run a centre, the Family Matters Centre, where I work a lot with clients, families, children, relationships between adults. And a lot of it is about grief. And yes, I do supervise a lot of people. But, and here's the really interesting thing, my latest qualification, which I didn't really want, was to be bereaved myself. And so what I realised is that I started to look at grief from two lenses. Sometimes they were symmetrical, sometimes they felt very, very far apart from each other. So my email to you was not to frighten you, but was to say, please tell me more about what you're doing.
My latest qualification is to be bereaved. Mm. My latest qualification is the loss of someone I love.
My latest qualification in understanding and awareness is to have lost somebody very special that I loved, yes.
Pretty crappy qualification if you ask me.
Yeah, well, that's what I raged to fate. I thought I'd had
you
enough.
You raged to fate, did you say?
Raged to fate. Did I need this? I'm very professional. I've studied for years. I've written. I've taught. I've written curriculum. You name it. I said to fate, why did I need this extra qualification? But it is an extra qualification, in fact. Unwilling as I was to be press ganged into the enrolment, it is another qualification. And creates probably more questions than answers. But because there are so many questions, one is compelled to seek answers, but they're not tidy answers, they're not easily found answers. But sometimes asking the questions heightens the awareness to the point where you don't need immediate answers, if that makes sense.
Not really, but it doesn't need to, does it?
No.
Does this stuff make sense, Jill?
I think really the answers is the accretion of awareness, consciousness. And if you want to be somebody who really connects with other people, whether that is the way you live anyway, which is wonderful. And in my case, I hope it's the way I live, but it's also the way I work. And so awareness is everything, really.
I am increasingly, through the experience of these conversations that I have with Adelos, aware that, in fact, I sat in a conversation with you the other day, right, with a very dear mutual friend of ours, and he too, right, bereaved of his life partner, and you said, "I don't want to go woo-woo." Do you remember that?
I said, "I don't mean to sound woo-woo," which is a sort of rather silly expression to say.
Well, no, I don't think it is, because especially we're talking to this friend of ours who is very well read.
Right? Yeah.
I would say borderline cynical about a number of things, right? And then he leant forward and he said, "I'm ready to go there." And my head almost snapped around to look at him, right? And what? Now, I've just, in the very seat that you're sitting in, I had a conversation with a man who's now 35. I've known him since he was perhaps 7 or 8 years old. And we're talking about the loss of his brother, the death of his brother 10 years ago, his younger brother, who I also knew as a boy. He has a tattoo on his shoulder of his brother, which mixed into the ink are some of the ashes of his brother.
Mm.
Now, it completely makes sense to me, and that doesn't make sense. When you say, "Does it make any sense?" I'm like, no. But I'm perfectly comfortable with things not making sense now. The more I sit with people in conversations around grief and loss, right, and being happy and living when we're aware of death, the more comfortable I seem to be with, "Can you answer that?" "Yeah, nah." "Oh, here's the answer." "I don't understand that." "Yeah, me neither." And that feels okay now. Even a month ago, I would not have sat comfortably with that. I would have needed to get to a point of clarity.
I think the context of that conversation, using that word woo-woo, we were talking about the variety of frameworks of understanding mortality and grief. And I was commenting on something that someone who's quite an alternative practitioner had been talking about, and I said it made a lot of sense. And I said, "I don't want to sound like I've suddenly become woo-woo." And I think our friend said, "Look, I'm also subscribing to many things that I would have hitherto found less than rational." And I think it's probably at a time of acute pain and grief, I think one starts to search much more widely, because in some of that searching, it's almost like a ritual. It's a ritual you didn't really know you needed or wanted. And part of that ritual is seeking. It's seeking some greater understanding, which is an end in itself at times, because it's an exploration. Life is an exploration. It turns out that losing someone you love very much is also an exploration.
Oh. When I sat down for that scary appointment with you, you said to me, "Professional lens or personal lens?" Do you remember?
Yeah.
Which one do we choose first?
Well, I think the interesting thing is, as I said at the beginning of this conversation, that there is a professional lens. And I think that it's very difficult to separate out the professional and the personal. A good professional will have an intuitive and very strong empathy for the person that they are working with. And that is often born of shared experience, or as Joni Mitchell used to sing, I see something of myself in everyone I meet. I think with something as big as grief, it's hard for me to really separate out my professional lens from my personal lens. I don't tell the people who come to talk to me about my own circumstances, because that's not what they're there to talk about. But I think people sense when they're seeking some help, they sense if they're understood properly.
And hence your qualification, the unwanted one.
That's what I meant. Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah.
I get it.
Yeah. Mm.
You were touched by someone else you'd heard in these podcasts, right?
Yeah.
That right?
Mm.
Can we talk to that for a moment?
Mm. Mm.
You tuned in, or downloaded it, played it.
Mm.
What happened?
Well, this particular person who had also lost their life partner,
Trish Guttenbill,
yes, was saying things that really, really resonated with me. And I suppose the main theme was just the profundity of the experience of, in her case, in my case, the loss of a partner. And also, very relevantly for me, was the fact that it wasn't easy to find the forum or the context or the help or the support being sought. And part of the difficulty of that search is that I think when you ask bereaved, whether it's suddenly bereaved or with anticipation, it still feels sudden. You're not even sure what you're looking for, basically. But what I do know that in my situation, I couldn't find what I was looking for. And I heard that from her as well. And so it touched me that she was able to talk to you in the way that she was, and how important that was for another person in her situation who happened to be a listener of the podcast.
I find it interesting. You didn't meet. You didn't have a conversation. You simply listened to her, and yet you felt in some way acknowledged.
I think when your situation is described, it becomes, it's got a therapeutic content. When someone can actually say the things that you've been feeling, it's not that you haven't been able to say them yourself, but to hear someone else echoing what they've been feeling from the same type of experience is reassuring in some ways, and makes me realize yet again how important it is that these conversations are able to be held and heard. And whilst, of course, it would be very much a paradox if I said I don't think that should be in therapy. Of course, I mean, I do therapy all the time and can see the impact it has on people. But there is something about being able to talk to somebody about your experience and have that reciprocated by someone who's had the same experience.
And yet a very unlike experience.
Right? Sure.
So Trish, you know, I think what she, three years on. She has four school-aged children.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, I mean, she and Jason had been together for an extended period of time, but nowhere near as long as you and Malcolm, right? And they were so quite unalike at the same time.
Unalike in detail, but in terms of the way that bereavement changes everything, and I think that's not properly understood by many people who haven't gone through the experience. It doesn't just change. Well, it does change life as you knew it, but it changes everything. It changes what you eat, what music you listen to, what your plans are, what you feel like wearing, what your social life was like, everything. And I don't think it necessarily matters what the other details are. The significant change is what is very, very difficult to accommodate. So, you know, whether it's a shorter relationship or a long relationship like hers, whether it's got children, whether it's in the context of grown-up children, it still changes everything. And change is something we're not terribly good at as humans.
Can I ask you about two things that we've talked about? Mm. One is where you told me off. So I think I was quite right to be scared, coming to the appointment, actually, right? Because we were talking about how to make a difference when something I'm constantly looking to do is, you know, you've said, and a number of people who speak with me in at a loss conversations, it's about be there to hear, right? Speak. The speak is important. And I said to you, the tool that I often use, I'm not equipped, right? I don't have your qualification training experience. And someone is in grief, and my magic words are, what do you need?
Mm.
And you're like, no, just no.
Mm. Mm. Well, I didn't really tell you off. What I said was, from my point of view, what you need wouldn't and wasn't, for me, the most helpful question, because being quite a private person and a person who has never easily taken things, what do you need? Because I'm bereaved doesn't mean I wasn't the person I was last week before I was bereaved. So I haven't suddenly had this kind of epiphany where I can suddenly understand it's all right to need things. And if I could just say very quickly, I think that there's this kind of assumption when you're bereaved that you suddenly change your personality. Suddenly you must become the willing recipient of all well-meaning offers. Well, it's easier said than done. And so for me, it wasn't what do I need? It was, can I talk and will you listen to me, please? That's what I needed. And I needed to talk about my partner and my love for him and the loss and how much it was hurting. It wasn't about I need to be taken for a drive or I need five more casseroles. I mean, that's all really, really nice, but it wasn't, for me and for quite a few other people I've spoken to, the top of the list.
The other thing I liked just after you told me off.
I didn't tell you off.
Was where you said you didn't know, right? I don't know what I need.
No, absolutely.
So where does that leave Mr. Well-intentioned and unqualified over here?
Well, I think what do you need is a very generous question, and I have absolutely no doubt that when you put that question to somebody, and if they were to say, I just need you to listen to me talking, that you would be hugely willing. So it's a valid question. It's just that I think what do you need could make someone in the shock of grief and despair. I already feel needy. I don't even know what I need. All I need is for you to hear me, and don't try and brighten me up by telling me what your cousin did last week, because at the moment I don't want to know. And I don't want to know what plans you're making with your partner to go and have a wonderful road trip, etc. At the moment I just need you to let me talk.
And not fill my space.
Yeah.
Even just be silent.
Not fill my space. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. And if I don't feel like talking, I need to be able to say thanks for the coffee and I'm leaving, even though I only arrived 6 minutes ago. I need you to accept that without being offended.
No problem.
No, I know there would be no problem with you, but one finds oneself in uncharted territory, and some people are very uncomfortable about how to manage someone who is bereaved and in a lot of pain and maybe going through a calm period, and then suddenly a wave hits and it can be uncomfortable, both for the person who's suffering the wave, absolutely, but also the person that's trying to cheer them up or support them, and suddenly that person says, look, I just have to go. So the need is for that to be understood.
And it's awkward, and it gets awkward.
Mm.
And I guess what I'm learning increasingly is awkward's okay.
Yeah.
Awkward's fine, actually. Mm. This is awkward, yeah.
Mm.
It's awkward.
Mm. And I think we need to learn to live with awkward, because life is awkward. But it's been, you know, life can be so sanitized, and so this is how it should be, and all of those sorts of things. But it's appreciating awkward as part of it.
So on that, yeah, and being relaxed and being awkward, right? So yeah. I guess I'm going back to the high school social experience.
Yes.
I actually had an okay time. I was pretty awkward the entire experience, you know, except for, you know, when Michael Salter turned up, or that rare occasion that Andrew Tumuana looked in my direction. But talking about painful and traumatic things, Here's what surprises me about them. I ask the most blunt questions of people in this series of conversations, you know. So your first child is the dead one and the second one's still alive, right? Mm. For example.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Mm. So your brother, how long has he been dead now?
Mm.
They are directly leading into a conversation about stuff which is painful and traumatic.
Mm.
What surprises me is, I mean, I've done nothing like the work that you've done, but I've done a little bit of work with people. I don't find these conversations taxing.
Mm.
And yet they are about pain and about trauma, and right? But I don't feel drained by them. Mm. I don't leave our sessions in this studio recording these and go, I need to have a sleep, or right?
Mm. Mm.
I don't, and I thought they'd be really taxing.
Mm. Mm. Well, that's, you make a good point, Timothy, and I think really the reverse, the opposite is true. That conversations that are authentic are energizing, not taxing. Taxing conversations are the ones where you're having to keep, as I say, the beach ball under the waves, under the water, keep it down, don't let it pop up. Taxing conversations are the ones where someone might just make the most subtle allusion to the fact that I'm in grief, but then carry on to talk about all manner of other things, because perhaps I don't want to be reminded that I'm in grief, as if, you know. The energizing ones are where people say, how are you doing? Talk to me about what's happening. Yeah.
And mention.
Please mention his name, her name. Please. It's so painful when the name of the person that you're grieving for and have lost is not mentioned, as if he hadn't existed, because you're left with that relationship with someone who's no longer there. And to not have, in my case, not to have Malcolm mentioned just adds to the grief and loss. And I suppose that these podcasts can partly explain to people why it's all right to feel, why it's all right to feel awkward in these conversations, because the person you're talking to will probably be energized.
You described the other day, I mean, you have a beautiful turn of phrase, but you talked about your falling and your splintering. I really loved that phrase. You said a free fall.
Free fall.
In my free fall,
yeah,
and my splintering. Pretty phrase. Doesn't sound like a pretty experience.
No, it's not. It's not a pretty experience. So free fall is where everything you knew to be true suddenly isn't. So it's a bit like floors giving way. And the splintering is as it sounds. You know, your life is also, well, for many of us, our lives feel splintered at the loss of the vision that we had. The vision was like this beautiful crystal vase that fell over and is now in splinters. So that there are a number of images that have come to my mind, and just quickly, the other one I've experienced is a sense of grief being very much like the homesickness I remember having as a child, which is like the aching of the heart. I want to go home, but the recognition that you can't go home, which is very tough. And also the other thought that flashed into my mind one day was I felt like I was at Grand Central Station and I was lost and everybody else was rushing around with whistles blowing and clocks ticking and I didn't know where to go. A bit, again, like the childhood experience of losing your mother in a department store. And again, that ties in with the homesickness, the loss, the ache.
Can I suggest that when you lost Malcolm... You lost home. You still have the house and the place, but you actually can't go home
anymore.
No,
that's right. I can't go home. That's right.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah. Those are the really painful parts.
And it's true. There's no hiding from it, right? It's a homesickness and you can't go home.
No, no.
Even when you're at home.
But you can adjust to it more if you can talk about it. Having that acknowledged makes it easier to manage.
In conclusion, what I've got from this, and I'd love you to summarise in a moment, I just hectored you about your own grief. You said you feel homesick, and I said, and you can't ever go home.
It's all right. There's nothing I didn't know.
And yet, you're the first friend I've made through grief, in being connected through the loss of Mary, who was my supervisor. You were her supervisor. She was your great-great friend. She was my friend of a comparatively short period of time, but who is loved by my entire whānau. I've never made a friend in grief before, so thank you.
My pleasure.
What would you like to leave as a concluding comments, Jill?
Well, I think Mary would be very pleased with friends, would be one concluding comment that I would make. The other is just that I think if you're talking to someone who's in grief, it's so important to try not to worry about your own sense of awkwardness. You're not being judged. The person you're talking to will be so grateful if you just let them talk and you hear them. You know, give grief a voice, as Shakespeare said. That's very, very true. And just thank you for having the initiative to make these podcasts.